Welcome to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
All right, welcome back to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 36, Mike and Brittany Ross. Yes, two people. There are a bunch of firsts for this interview, and it's absolutely my favorite interview so far for a couple of reasons. First off, it's kind of uncomfortable sitting across from people when you're interviewing them, and this is my first experience at it, so it was new for me, but they made it just such a great experience. Used a different level recording. So you're going to hear it's a portable podcast recording device I use, so the quality is not going to be the same. Just warning you now. Very sensitive mic picks up some breathing here and there and a little scuffling, but the content is phenomenal. And, you know, it again, what's new for me is I'm interviewing two people at once. I'm used to interviewing one. So I loved all the newness of it. It was new for me. It felt great doing it. But what really came from it was the relationship, to get to see a relationship that works, that's worked on intentionally, is just so neat. So in this segment, we spend quite a bit of time talking about entrepreneurism, as a couple. It really is inspiring. I think you're going to get the most from this podcast. I really feel good about it. So let's get into it. All right, welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, and this one is a little different for a couple reasons. First off, you're going to hear the quality of audio is not going to be as good because I'm on my portable podcast device. Second off, I'm in a hotel room in Chicago. Third, I'm interviewing a couple, and I've never interviewed a couple before, so I'm really interested in it, but this is a power couple. And I'm interviewing them face-to-face, so it makes it even a little bit more uncomfortable. But this power couple is a seven-figure seller, and they are really growing and expanding, and it's just interesting, the dynamic. And I think that's the thing that you're going to get from this podcast, is a way to make a relationship and business work together. And I'm sure it works perfect every single time, and they're not going to tell us any horror stories. Welcome, Mike and Brittany Ross. Welcome.
Nice. Glad to be here.
Really appreciate you guys. We've talked a few different times, and to be able to talk in person, I think is really interesting, because I know the conversations we had, we were together in Louisville, down in CES, and I was just blown away, because usually there's one person who's more dominant in the selling relationship, but I was equally impressed, and so that's a little intimidating for me, because I think the thing that surprised me is Mike would say he's the entrepreneur. Are you the business person more, Brittany, would you say?
I think I do a lot more of the behind the scenes, keeping those nuts and bolts in place to keep the business going. I'm the number cruncher.
I'm much more likely to let a checkbook go unchecked, or maybe leave a bill unpaid and get that late fee. And to be honest, before she joined me, I think that getting a late fee, you know, not because I couldn't pay the bill, but just because I overlooked the fact that it was due, fairly commonplace.
So that would, let's go back then. How long have you guys been married?
Since 2005.
Okay. So,
10-year anniversary earlier this year.
Oh, yep. Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Is the relationship all the way back that same way? I mean, was that what attracted you guys to each other? Opposites attract, right?
Yeah, I've always been more my checkbook is always balanced, and the bills are always paid on time, and I'm definitely a little bit more detail-oriented. There was one moment back in 2006, maybe, where I told him if he were my employee, I would have fired him because his checkbook hadn't been balanced for something like 3 years, and he wanted me to fix the problem. We definitely have our strengths and weaknesses. He's a bigger thinker. He thinks big, and I look at the details of how can we make it
happen. Does she rein you in sometimes, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sure that has to happen, right?
I've had ideas come to me on a regular basis since I was probably 13 years old, and I've spent a lot of money exploring ideas. She has probably saved us a lot of money by shutting my ideas down before I've had a chance to blow it.
I want to hear about the entrepreneur. You came from an entrepreneurial family.
Absolutely.
But I also don't want to lose this point. So you're saying that sometimes she shuts you down. Have you guys evolved into a process where you take crazy idea, Mike, bring it into some form of discussion, and where you can vet the idea and then vet it against where you want to go? I mean, do you guys have a big picture where you want to go? Have you thought out how far out you're going to go?
It does change.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So it evolves. So
it evolves constantly.
We do not have any sort of set dates. We don't know when we want to retire. We don't know how much money we want to retire with. We do know that we want to grow our business, maybe not necessarily in terms of Amazon sales. You know, we're exploring other avenues.
Right.
And sometimes we'll get started on a project and maybe, you know, a few weeks in, a few months in, maybe we'll realize this isn't the right way to go. Or maybe someone's beat us to the punch. Or
the idea just wasn't as good as we thought it was.
Right. So is there a process, though? Have you come to a place where...
Our process is generally sitting on our kitchen counters while maybe the kids are playing or watching TV or whatever. And we just sit and we talk. And he'll bring up an idea or I have an idea. In our process is that the other one immediately starts trying to figure out where the holes are, where is it not going to work? Hmm. So that way we can solve for those things now, or we can shut the idea down and go, you know what, that was not my best idea. And we just spend a lot of time honestly sitting on our kitchen counters because they make a nice L shape, and we find ourselves just perched there talking.
But what's so cool about it, I mean, because it is a limit, like in my wife works in the business a little bit with me, but there is a limit because she's not as interested in that side of it. Mm-hmm. And so you don't get those conversations. I interviewed Greg Murphy, and he talked about, he's got a staff, right? He's got a huge, if you ever mm-hmm. see it, it's an incredible operation. But he said, you know, the hardest thing about his business, and his wife helps a little bit, but they got a little kid, and he said the hardest part is he can't talk to his employees at this level.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we've had a conversation before we went live here. That's deeper than most people can get because they don't have somebody they're that close to. So it's interesting that you guys can have these conversations right at your house.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, you know, I guess that's good. And I'm sure there's a bad that sometimes it's hard to turn off because I'm sure sometimes you're sick of talking about it or you're sick of talking about one of you guys. Has to be, you know, it has to happen time to time. And so I think it's really interesting that you guys can come to that place. I interviewed Dan Miller, and he talked about that he has to get rid of 15% of what he does every year. That's his ritual. And he said, these things are still working, and he said, I have to figure out what to get rid of. How do you guys deal with that directional change, that evolution? I mean, is it all naturally occurring, or is that coming from that same discussion time, saying, you know what, I'm getting tired of doing this, I'm tired of bagging socks, for example. You know, I'm getting tired of because it's too much work. Where's that happen?
So I've always tried on occasion. I do not have, a set schedule on, you know, when I do this. But every once in a while, I will look at the different things that make me money. And I will try to eliminate the one that makes me the least money.
Okay, so is it the Pareto principle, the 80-20, or... Are you drawing a diagram? I mean, are you that formal?
No.
You know, because Dan Miller talks about using a Venn diagram. If you can envision three circles, mm-hmm. and everything fits into a circle, and then where they cross over, that's a sweet spot, and blah, blah, blah. So what's your process?
I think you're much more guttural.
Yeah.
Just how you're feeling.
I'm not a process person.
But how do you know what's bringing you the most money? What is that where Brittany's strength comes in, and you're able to say, hey, you know, I mean, I know I get reports and 50% of my sales right now are shoes, for example, mm-hmm. right? And so when you look down that, but that doesn't mean it's where I'm making my money.
Right.
It's my highest selling, but that doesn't necessarily make me the most money. How are you knowing those numbers?
Okay. Without actually having figures to back things up. And I do have, I don't want to say it's anything that resembles genius, but I do have a pretty good calculator in my head.
Okay.
And I'm able to run a lot of numbers in my head. It helps me make buying decisions on the fly. It helps me to determine, you know, this category of item might do really well for us. This category of item might not. Maybe this place that I'm buying things from returns a pretty good amount of money, but the time that I need to spend on that source outweighs the money that it brings back. I, without giving any, you know, specifics, because I don't want to, you know, throw anybody under the bus, there is a source that we have recently purchased inventory from. Some of the inventory was pretty good, some of it wasn't that great, but the time it took to process that inventory
wasn't worth it.
That alone was
within a you know, a couple weeks of exploring this opportunity, I've had to dump it because
so it helped
it's
you
generating
make that
cash, absolutely,
right. But it's not the best use of your time.
Let's put it this way. Not. That source, so much time got involved in the prep and sorting of that inventory that we didn't even want to go back and look at the profit.
Okay.
Because it's just not worth it. There's no amount of money that's going to make it worth it because we don't have... It's the kind of inventory that came in that we have to look at to make sure it's not counterfeit, to make sure it's not used. And we can't trust that to our employees right now. Not on that level from this source. So there was no amount of money.
So I've interviewed, it was Joy Packard who said, one thing leads to another. So that led you right to the easy decision.
Cut it.
Yeah, it probably could make money, but there are lots of things I can do to make money, and there are more profitable things.
Absolutely.
Right.
So that brings me back to the entrepreneur, right? So, you know, when I asked you guys who would be the entrepreneur, you said it was you, Mike,
yes.
Right? But you said it was, it came... You inherited it? You grew up with it? Tell us about that.
Sure. So when I was born in St. Joe, Michigan, my father was an employee of a packaging company. He had gone to school. He had gotten his bachelor's degree. He, for whatever reason, went into packaging engineering. He was a package designer. And he was working for a company, forgive me for not knowing the name. Obviously he found a better job somewhere else. We moved to Mississippi. He found a better job somewhere else. We moved to Kentucky. And then I think when we moved to Indiana was his first foray into owning his own business. Moved again to somewhere else in Indiana that might have had a better rent. And then we ended up in Ohio. He eventually partnered with another gentleman. They own one of the premier EPS companies in the country. That's expanded polystyrene, styrofoam.
Yeah, cool.
He creates packaging for Whirlpool, for GE, for the U.S. military.
He still does?
He is turning 70 in April of next year, and he does want to sell the company within the next 12 months.
But up until this point,
He's working.
He's on
Shows
the
up for
road.
Work. No kidding.
He drives
meeting
about
with customers.
80,000 miles.
He had a Chevy van with half a million miles on it.
No kidding.
Yeah.
He hustles.
So he was lucky, right? I always, you know, I just interviewed again Dan Miller, and Dan Miller said that he did a podcast for 12 years. It was a radio show turned into a podcast and a newsletter for 12 years, 52 weeks a year, never missed. And somebody says, "Oh, you're really lucky." And he goes, "Yeah."
Yeah.
That's how lucky I am, because I put in the time. So your dad would say he's been very lucky,
sure.
Because he's out there putting 80,000 miles a year selling.
Mm-hmm. And his father before him was a farmer and a bar restaurant owner.
Yeah.
My mother.
So multiple sources of income
at
the same time.
Sure. My mother's father was a serial entrepreneur. He did everything from volunteer firefighter. He was a dog catcher. He was... Believe it or not, a flea market guy. You know, he used to go around and collect things and take them to the flea market, and that's how he made his money. And one way or another, somehow I ended up doing that too.
Yeah, and what interests me is that you were selling antiques and things like that, right, and collectibles and stuff.
Absolutely.
Did you pick up the eye from the family? Was it discussed? I mean, did you work at the flea market? How did that
happen? No, my grandfather was in New Jersey.
Okay.
And I grew up in Ohio, you know, but we would visit and he would take me to the flea market and he might buy me a couple things when I was really young.
But you remember that?
Absolutely.
That's neat.
I loved it. And I started selling things, buying and selling things in the fifth grade. And the first thing I ever bought and sold was actually a vintage item. There was a kid, and he had these Coca-Cola and Pepsi and 7-Up advertisements that used to be posted up in grocery stores. And I think it was because his father worked for a distributor, you know, somewhere in town. And the kid was moving away, and he had this whole big box of this stuff, and he said, "You want it?" And I bought it from him for maybe $5 for everything, fifth grade. And then I sold these things for $1 a piece.
Just locally to other kids?
Just to the kids in the class.
No kidding.
Yeah, kids at school. And then I graduated to candy in the sixth and seventh grade, and I was selling baseball cards.
You were the go-to guy that people knew, that you're always, hey, that's what you do.
Yeah, and it was at a time when nobody that was in an authoritative position in school thought to shut me down.
Right.
So I was kind of just able to do it, just selling stuff out of my locker and out of my backpack in high school, you know. And then eventually, 2002-ish, that's when it became, you know, a full-time job for me.
And that's when you started on eBay.
Yes.
Now, eBay at 2002, and I think about that, that's the Wild West back then. I mean, because it wasn't as organized, you know, putting... You could put one picture probably back then. Right?
I think I was able to put more pictures. To be honest, I think that it was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 8.
Okay, so you were able to get to 8. It wasn't as easy as it is now, where the phone, it makes it really easy to make a list.
Sure,
it's still,
I think you can do 24 photos. If you want more photos, you can just embed them in the
list
itself.
It's really convenient now. It wasn't then. So where did you? So back then, who were you old enough to have the account in your name? You were.
Yes.
Okay. I don't want to date you. I don't want to
I
say you're
old. I think I was
about
25 years old.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, you're older than you look. Oh, that's good. Take that.
No, that's great.
So you had this, that was your full-time job?
Yes. When I turned, I was 22, 25.
Still living at home?
No.
Okay. So you're
on your own? I had actually just recently purchased a house.
Your first house.
That I had possibly already proposed to you.
No. No, not in 2002.
Okay, so that's coming up.
Wait, so, okay, yeah, because I want to know what you think of...
Yeah, so I'm the girlfriend that's off at college that comes home on the weekends.
And he's selling it on eBay.
What are you doing? What do you mean you spent $300 this week on stuff? That doesn't make... What?
That's funny.
Oh, yeah, that scared her.
I was terrified.
I could come home from an auction.
What's your degree in?
Art education.
Okay, so you have a creative side.
Mm-hmm. A little bit.
But you also have that analytical side.
My analytical side... is very strong. I have a talent for drawing and painting.
Okay, so you have that. And you come and see Mr. Cash in the Pocket kind of guy.
I come from a family where nobody takes risks. We are good employees. My dad's worked for FedEx for 30 years. My mom worked for Holiday Inn for 30 years.
Structure.
Very structured.
They get their vacation, they can plan it, they know everything.
And
you
know,
meet Mr. Flying by the seat of his pants.
Yeah, it didn't make sense to me that you, like, how could you spend this money on what I call inventory, but you don't know what it's going to sell for? Like, that didn't make sense. That's too risky. Where's your money going to come from? How are you going to make a living?
And in your mind, you knew exactly what it was going to sell for because you knew the value.
I
you saw the value. Right?
I had an idea of
would
where
you call
it was
that one of your
for.
Skill sets? Is that you recognize value? Because
I
consider that my skill set.
I recognize quality when we're talking about vintage items or even newer items. But I that wasn't my wheelhouse back then. It was all about vintage, antique, and I was able to recognize quality. And I was usually right if I saw something and I thought it had quality, and I went to do the research on it. More often than not, I was right. The world agreed with me that this item had quality.
Well, now I'm interested in how that converts over into Amazon today, because I think that skill is transferable. So let's go to break. When we come back, I want to talk about how you're able to take a skill set that clearly was honed over years, and then you're able to convert that into buying inventory at an unbelievable level for Amazon, and you have your spouse over here tempering some of that creativity and that skill set. So let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about that.
Excited to bring on a new sponsor today, YourSourcedInventory.com. That's YourSourcedInventory.com, where they focus on shoes and clothing, great gated categories, high average selling price. Remember that high average selling price with a good return of investment means more profit in your pocket. Here's some stats they sent me for September. In shoes, they averaged the top 2%, average rank of 7,000, net profit of almost $30 with an ROI of 89%. Those are good numbers. Clothing, top 2 to 3%, average rank was 4,000. $1,132, net profit of about $12, and ROI, again, of 104%. Those are great. These are online deals that are sent to you 5 days a week. You get 10 items a day. You're going to be able to grow your business from the comfort of your home. This is exactly what we needed for our business. It's the reason we're using them. So we think this is a great way that you can move forward in a great category. YourSourcedInventory.com. YourSourcedInventory.com. Man, I hope you're as jazzed as I am about listening to this. And, you know, this is, I've listened to it a couple times because it's just so inspiring. He speaks so well of his wife. She speaks so well of her husband. Yet they speak as a partnership. It's just so neat to see. This segment, it gets even deeper and even better. The advice that they give will just flow over into your personal life in so many ways. It's just such strong advice. Even if you're not married, even if it's just a real partnership, it's really being mindful of the other person. It's putting yourself in their shoes and realizing that, you know what, you might have some culpability. You might be a little bit wrong. And so maybe approach it differently. It's just great advice all around. I just think you're going to get so much from this. Let's get back into the podcast.
All right, we're back, and we're talking with Mike and Brittany Woros, and we're talking about your foray from eBay to Amazon. And I do want to complete the marriage portion of it, right? So at this point, you were still wild man selling on eBay, doing this and that, hadn't proposed yet. How did that? Did you graduate by the time?
I graduated the fall of 2004. I was a 5.5 year college person. We got married in 2005,
okay,
about 6 months later, February 2005. So he proposed 2003.
And you were 4 years into this. I mean, so you really now were earning a full-time living.
Mm-hmm.
And you've earned it's interesting. We started talking about what constitutes a successful eBayer. And to have the sales that you had at that year, that's massive. I mean, that's really successful. I mean, you really, because you don't have the prep company, there were people that'll ship for you and stuff like that. That didn't exist back then. You were doing all that work yourself. Now, you're saying, oh, it's only 35 items a week or 30, 35 items a week. That's still a lot. I mean, it's impressive.
On eBay, yeah. Yeah, and you're right. There was no prep service. I did not have...
We had a dining room lined with shelves full of what anyone else would consider junk.
Did you have an inventory system set up then?
I had an Excel spreadsheet,
okay,
to keep track of.
But the shelves, were the shelves labeled or stuff like that? Or you did?
No.
Did you organize them in some way?
No.
No. So no, it was just chaos.
It was chaos.
I mean, that must have blown your mind.
I'm a very organized person,
yeah,
so I just got used to it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, at least it was neatly on the shelves most of the
time.
Yes,
and to be fair, if I'm selling 30 items a week, and let's say, you know, it's pretty easy to keep track of that. As opposed to something like Amazon, where, you know, I could potentially go out and buy 300 units in a day. Now you've got to have a little better system.
Well, how big was your inventory on eBay then? I mean, how many SKUs or how many items did you have listed?
At any given time?
Mm-hmm.
30. Everything was auction style. I started everything at a penny,
okay,
all the time. If
I have 5,000 SKUs on eBay,
mm-hmm,
right,
okay,
now.
This
and
was...
we sell about 30 a week.
Yeah, you never did buy it now. Very rarely.
No, I never overextended my budget. You know,
so because you knew what you were buying, you were careful in what you were buying. Mm-hmm. Did you have a target profit level or dollar amount? I mean, is that where you started that mental thing saying, hey, if I want to earn, you know, $1,000 a week, I need to sell, you know, 50, well, let's say I need to sell 30 items and make $30 on each one to get me there. Is that where your mind was going? Was it that sophisticated?
I wish I had a better answer for you, but I think generally I hoped to make money, and I usually did. And sometimes, you know, it was really good. I sold a $25 painting once for 5,000 euros.
Wow.
About $7,000.
That's cool.
A box of flat top beer cans from the 1960s for $5. By the time I had made my way to the bottom of that box of beer cans, I had probably netted in the neighborhood of $6,000 to $8,000.
Wow, that's incredible. Do you think that was it the time?
And then there were other times. Sorry to interrupt, but there were other times where I remember on one specific occasion I lost $1,700 in a day.
Okay, so you knew. So as long as you're winning more than you're losing, in the end, you're ahead, right?
And the first few years that I was doing this business on eBay, she was managing jewelry stores and banks.
Oh.
And I stole her bonus for 3, possibly 4 years in a row. And when I say stole, she was aware.
this is true.
But
the business needed it. The business needed more capital, and the family didn't necessarily need it as much as the business did. I always believed in him, even when the numbers weren't adding up. Like, I knew.
Yeah, that's why I could sense that
he was going the right direction.
I could see that you had that confidence in him. I could see that in the way you looked at him right then and there. I see that. That's cool.
I will say that the year that I switched over from eBay to Amazon, I did produce an income of $50,000 that year on eBay. So I did get better every year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it was a slow growth.
But to produce an income like that, that's a significant skill set. I mean, that's a skill set.
30 items a week.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a real skill set. And I don't think you should take that lightly. I mean, that's impressive. I mean, it really is. I think most people, you know, I think it's pretty easy to sell things. It's not easy to make money at it. And not easy to make money at a level like that when handling so few items. Mm-hmm. So you clearly have an eye for it. That's pretty cool.
Looking back, I'm kind of surprised I made the jump because I didn't have any reason to. Other than the fact that I'd run across a few stories from already successful Amazon sellers, and I just chose to go in feet first, full force, give it everything I had. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that I left eBay completely in the dust, but it took a real backseat immediately.
Do you regret it?
Do I regret
making the transition?
No.
Okay, so that's a positive thing. Mm-hmm. Do you miss it?
I miss the adventure, the hunt. I miss the auctions because of this great social aspect, which, I'll be honest, these conferences that we're going to, and this is only our second one, it's really brought some of that joy back that I've been missing out on for a few years. The social aspect of eBay, the auction circuit, was great because every week I might go to one, maybe two auctions, and I would just walk around and hang out and talk to people, share the stories and, you know, the good times and the bad.
Right.
And for the past handful of years, Brittany has been one of, if not the only people, like, that I've really been able to communicate with about my business.
Did it become a job? Well, I mean, I got to ask this the right way, because, you know, you guys are amazingly successful, and I don't want to take away from that in any way. Up until this conference, the CES conference where I met you guys, would you say it became a job at a point a few times a year where you're sitting there saying, oh man, I just created myself a job. What am I doing? You know?
Sometimes it feels like that.
Okay.
I won't say that I always feel like that.
Okay. Well, here's my point, as I want to make this point, is that you're saying that this conference, that first conference, and clearly you got something from it because you're at a second conference, not that much longer.
2 months.
2 months,
month.
3 months. Oh, is it only a month?
The
days just blend together for me. I work so many hours. But I think that that's a great golden nugget. I need a golden nugget from you. And here it is right there, is that when you started feeling that this was becoming a job, because you're making plenty of money, it's not the money issue. You have found a way to get other people common interest, and that's what you're doing right now. And I just think that that's so powerful. I think people who are out there listening right now are saying, man, I got to pack boxes. I got to do this and that. And you're saying, wait, get out of the house. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's hard because you got kids, right? So that makes
it's
it even harder.
Difficult.
Both of you away. And you've been able to figure that out. I think that's a really powerful thing, and I think it's going to help some people. This is a way. Greg Murphy said the same thing. He said, I need other people to talk to at this level.
You do.
That's what I need.
You need to be able to share those stories. You need to be able to vent. You need to hear what other people are doing. You can get a lot of relationships, you can build them on Facebook, but they're still not the same quality because you don't know that person face-to-face. Once you meet somebody and you can put that face with the name, you get their personality, you start talking over drinks and dinner, and you just open up, and they open up in a way that you just can't get on Facebook alone.
I think that's,
it makes it worth it.
I think it's so great. And I think the other thing is you guys have problems. We all do. Mm-hmm. Anybody who sells, you got problems. Anybody who's in any kind of business. And you have now another sounding board.
Mm-hmm.
Because together you guys are powerful. Clearly you wouldn't be so successful. But that third idea, you'll be like, huh. Because mm-hmm. I'm sure, like in my marriage, I'm married 30 years, you guys have... You know, you probably could finish each other's sentences. You know what he's going to think, and you know what.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of is a limit sometimes, right? And so by having somebody else offer something, I'm sure you're getting something from that. And I think there's mm-hmm. another lesson there.
Well, and it's great because I'm not going to reach out to someone that I barely know on Facebook and ask for help because I don't want to bother them. I always feel like they're busy. They don't want to help me. I'm asking them to do me a favor. But once you meet someone face-to-face, it's no big deal to reach out and say, hey, remember that thing we were talking about? I have a question.
Now it's a relationship.
And now people reach out to us even more, and it feels great to be able to help other people who have questions about things where we're like, oh yeah, we do know a lot about that. You don't realize how much information you have in your head until you can actually talk to other people and help them as well. So that's another great benefit.
I mean, for instance... We spent 10 minutes this morning in a Dunkin' Donuts talking with another couple, and they're a lot newer to the game than we are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that, you know, they're a lot smaller, and part of that is because they're so new. But in those 10 minutes, I feel like we probably gave them some real nuggets that they can use. While at the same time, if I think back to CES... We spent about 10 minutes talking to Barrington McIntosh. I believe he's a bigger seller than we are. I believe that he does things differently than we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for a fact we picked up some nuggets from him.
Mm-hmm.
And these people we talked to this morning, in a few months, they're going
to
be in a position where
to
they're going
to
be
else.
Giving nuggets mm-hmm. to people. And it's just, it is funny to or at least inspiring, to see how, you know, people can help each other grow without even really trying to. You're just having a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they might ask a question, and gosh, you've got an answer.
It's very rewarding. Isn't it enriching?
It is.
Is it enriching your life a little bit, you know, to know that you could have made a difference with that couple? First off, they get to see a couple to have a in business together, not at each other's throat, still able to respect the relationship of the marriage. And yet they might be able to move forward because of the conversation
mm-hmm.
you have. That's enriching. That's
it
pretty
is.
Cool.
It is. And I don't think we knew the benefit of that until we came to a conference.
Hmm.
We were, especially Mike, was a little bit stingier with information. There is that mindset that if I help people, I'm just helping my competition. They're not going to hurt our business. We're going to grow because we're helping people. Our Amazon business will continue to grow because guess what? There's enough inventory out there for a lot of different people.
And you guys have figured it out.
Yeah.
Chris Green would tell you that, you know, he'll sell 1,000 books and, you know, 20 people will do anything with
mm-hmm.
it. You know, and that's the problem, right? Because
mm-hmm.
you want to, so, you know, just giving information, you know, there's lots of free information. Most people won't take action. So
right.
I think that's pretty cool. Now, Brittany, you're not the entrepreneur, right?
I am not.
But you're still a creative. How do you use your creativity in the business? How does that impact the business?
I'm always trying to figure out ways to grow the business without having to do more work. So I try to use the analytical side, but then the creative side as well. So are there ways that we can sell more product that we already have? Barrington McIntosh taught us to do two packs of the one thing that we're selling. Just make the two pack listing. Very,
cheaper
very
fees,
simple.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Because you're only paying the Amazon pick and pack fee once
right.
for two items, right? So you can even lower the cost and you still could make the same amount of money, right?
Mm-hmm. So something as simple as that. Or promoting things through ads. I'm always toying with I do a lot of different ad campaigns. I run an automatic campaign where Amazon selects the keywords, and I run that on every listing. But then I go through and I specifically target a lot of our wholesale items or maybe retail items that we can replenish.
And you're doing this while he's outsourcing?
I'll do that, yeah, while he's outsourcing. And so I'm trying to drive traffic to those listings, and I'm always trying to toy with keywords, what keywords are going to drive more traffic. And then I go in and look, and then I do some things with other businesses that we haven't quite launched yet. You know, we're working on some other products and doing logo design and trying to get that artistic side, that the real creativity. Getting that to go
the stuff that's the urge that you mm-hmm. have, right? You have right. it in you got to
right.
get it out.
So.
Does that help you, Mike, when you're out there sourcing to know that, you know, you have a good product, you know that she'll be able to market it well for you, and you kind of don't have to even worry about that? Does that help?
I hadn't thought about it.
Hmm.
I really hadn't. I honestly am
Well,
always...
you don't take it for granted. Obviously, right? But
no.
it just...
When it comes down to it, though... When I'm outsourcing, I'm always trying to find products that are going to sell when they hit the warehouse, regardless mm-hmm. of anybody's creative aptitude
okay.
or marketing ability.
So that's that eye that we talked about earlier that transfers probably over
sure.
from eBay, where you were able to find an item, you were able to look at a table of things, and actually pick out the one item that had value there, that you knew you could get 10x or 20x the value of what you're paying for it. You're able to bring that when you're outsourcing now, right? That
yes.
skill set. That
yes.
It is a transferable skill. I think recognizing value, or as you say, quality, is that. And then you just give it a little
mm-hmm.
square by being able to promote a great
right.
item that he brought back.
Right. And that's something that we can offer our wholesale vendors as well. We're not just taking your product and putting it on Amazon. We are trying to drive traffic. We try to add value so we can secure some more accounts.
Have you had that conversation with a wholesaler
mm-hmm.
before? Oh, that's
yep.
neat.
Yeah.
And if you can demonstrate that, that's very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that just opens up the world because, you know, everybody's a product. I'm dealing with a shoe company right now, and he's like, we're very particular who we deal with, Steve.
Absolutely.
You know, and I'm like, well, I understand that, but you're local to me, and you're going to, I want to meet you face to face because I do everything through email. I'm tired of that. I want to meet somebody face to face. I'm kind of excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
So by having that ability, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. If you can go to a brand owner or if you can go to them and tell them, here's why you want to sell to me versus the other 50 people who contacted you today. Here's what I'm going to offer you. And you really are going to offer that to them. You're going to build that relationship.
Well, walk me through. What would that conversation look like? So Steve's selling, and I'm selling...
Well, here's one. I recently secured a deal with a tea company.
Okay.
And we discussed that they already have a lot of their products on Amazon. I let them know that I use Merchant Words. It's a great little service. And you plug in what you think people are going to search for on Amazon, and it'll give you what they're actually searching.
Okay.
And so I could go to him and tell him, people are searching for herbal teas, but they're also searching for very specific things. They're searching for, instead of herbal tea, they might be tea that cures this, or tea that treats this, or whatever ailment it is. And I can then take those exact keywords that buyers are typing into Amazon, and I can put those into our ads, and that's going to drive traffic to their listing. And he really liked that. We signed the deal. He's like, great, I want to work with you guys.
Because you get
you,
it.
Yeah, I want
you're gonna help
you to sell
me
my
grow
product.
My business.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
is win-win. So that's
mm-hmm.
a great example. That's great stuff. All right, let's have the uncomfortable marriage discussion, okay? Because I'm interested in this. You guys get up in the morning together, you work together,
mm-hmm.
and you...
We're together a lot.
You're together a lot.
Sure.
10 years of marriage,
mm-hmm.
a couple kids.
Mm-hmm. Two kids.
Two kids.
6 and 3.
So you made it past the 7-year point.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't kill each other. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
You're still entrepreneurial. You still have that spirit, and you're still
mm-hmm.
disciplined and controlling him, and holding him back, or whatever the term is, to
rein
him in.
I take risks. I'm not reckless.
Okay.
This is true.
Mulling it all on seven. None of that kind of stuff. You don't make fatal decisions, fatal choices, and stuff like
right.
that. So
sure. And I'm pretty good with money. I'm not willing necessarily to risk it all.
Great.
You know, and I've never been that way because you know if you risk half of it, at least you've got
the other half
right. that right. you get back on your feet. So no, I've never been reckless. But you're wanting a story about a time maybe we disagreed.
Well, I think it's safe to say that you do. Any marriage,
absolutely disagree. I'm not going to say it's often, but it's often enough.
Okay.
I like to use the terms we lock horns, where one of us wants to go one way, and maybe I think that's not the best idea, and so we lock horns, and then we debate, and we try to sell our side to each other. Sometimes we have to walk away, and I think if that helps us, is that we can walk away from an argument, and we don't take things too personal. Maybe you disagree, but we do try to keep things professional. When it comes to our business, if you don't like my idea, will you still love me? You just don't like my idea. Maybe I'm not presenting it well. Maybe it's a bad idea. But
there's no screaming matches.
Okay,
no.
Well, that's cool.
In our business. There's no screaming matches in our personal life. But I will say that if we're going to have a disagreement where there is some tension, we are more likely to have what people, I guess, would determine to be a fight, even though there's no fighting. But, you know, for lack of a better word, we might fight more about whether or not the hosta should go here than whether or not we should do this
buy
thing
more
with
tea.
Our business.
Buy more,
or,
yeah.
Right. I mean, you know,
we're much more
there's
likely
more contention
to
in our personal life than
yeah.
there is in our business life. And to say, yeah, I don't want to overplay it, honestly, there's not a lot of disagreement either way. But if you want a story about...
Well, I want to be able to do this, because you're saying that it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I want to be able to help people, because it's going to happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are able to work through that. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like some kind of, you know, some kind of, not real formal, but just something that, just to demonstrate where you're able to walk through that, how you're able to walk through it rationally, instead of that screaming match.
Sure. Okay. I will say this. I'll give you an example. And it'll be kind of funny because of what we're doing here. I came home, probably from a sourcing trip once, and she told me that she'd agreed to do an interview with somebody in the industry. And I didn't talk to her for probably 6 hours. She said earlier that I used to be really stingy with the information that mm-hmm. I had. And I suppose there's still a couple nuggets that I have locked away that I'm not ready to, you know, give to the world. But for the most part, look, I'm here now. I'm giving an interview. I'm at conferences. I'm a pretty open book. And I think usually the way that we deal with these disagreements is that after 6 hours or so, I realize that I'm being ridiculous.
Yeah, no, I get it.
And I make it, you know, I will apologize begrudgingly because it's hard to say you're sorry sometimes.
Especially for a man, I get it.
But if it's anybody's shortcoming when we do have an argument, a disagreement, what some would might determine to be a fight, I'm probably generally, you know, the responsible party. Because, I don't know, maybe I'm a little more emotional. And
so you kind of...
I'm a little more neurotic, for sure. I know
so
that.
Do you bottle it up? So you said that you just wouldn't talk to her. So rather than say the wrong thing, you give the silent treatment.
He gave the silent treatment. I remember it very specifically. I think it was closer to 8 hours, but it was definitely...
It's been a few years.
It was definitely...
But you don't
want to
say the wrong thing. I mean, I understand that. I can relate to that. That's probably the way I would handle it, too.
And I knew he was very angry. And so part of his anger came from the fact that I did this without discussing it. So my lesson was, wait, we're a partnership. If I'm going to go out and do an interview, I might want to discuss it with my partner first.
Sounds reasonable, fair. So
yeah.
So both of you came to a you know, not that you're both wrong or both guilty. You're both saying, yeah, I probably should handle it differently. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'll handle it differently. You establish better boundaries, maybe? Mm-hmm. Is that a way to say it?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
I think that's a bad thing.
And always try, you know, and it's difficult for people, but before you blame everybody else for everything, at least try to see yourself
in
the position of, like, you know, like, what could I have done wrong here?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people aren't capable of that.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And it helps to try and put yourself in the position of the person who, you know, actually, you know, this is my fault. How could this be my fault? And, okay, yeah, I gave her the silent treatment for granting an interview about, and I'm pretty sure I listened to the interview. I don't think she gave away our
business.
It was
a pretty superficial interview. There wasn't a lot being given there.
But she made a good point in that, yeah, we're a partnership, and we probably shouldn't do anything, because I considered it a pretty big deal. You know, nobody had ever asked us to do an interview before, so that's a big deal. And absolutely, we should probably agree or disagree together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's very healthy.
Yeah, and you have to have a respect for your spouse as a business partner. They're your business partner. You're obviously in this together, and if you don't respect them, or if they don't respect you, that's going to cause problems. This business grew to where it is now because of his actions for many years. So even when he makes a mistake where I'm like, oh, how did you do that? I still have to remember, oh, we have this business because of all of those decisions he made along the way that were right.
And you're putting that, if you put it in perspective, that one mistake out of 100
right.
non-mistakes, mm-hmm. it really is a perspective issue,
and
right? And I think that's really a successful marriage. When you really think about, you know, I love this and 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 this about him. I don't like when he does this, mm-hmm. you know, or the toilet seat up, or whatever
right.
it is, right?
Right.
That's always the argument, or the toothpaste cap.
Right.
I remember my sister saying, you want to know whether she puts the toothpaste cap back on the thing, because some people get mm-hmm. insane over that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I think that's just a great, great piece of advice.
And I would challenge every listener to work on being conscious of yourself. This is something you're never going to be perfect at, but being aware, I'm the type of person that gets, what's the word, hangry, where you get really angry when you're hungry.
Yeah, cranky. Yeah, I get
very
it.
Cranky, and that's me. And so I will start picking, and he recognizes it now to the point it's comical. He'll go, "Oh, we need to get you some
yeah,
food.
Here's a candy bar.
Right
just do
here.
Eat anything. Just something."
But
what
being,
did I tell you before we came
yep,
up for the interview?
Let her eat.
Let her eat.
Don't talk to her until she eats.
But being aware of these things in yourself, knowing what your emotional level is when you're about to go into a situation with your spouse. Are you picking the fight? Why? Like, just trying to be conscious of how you're actually feeling. It's something that I've been working on a lot over the past 12 months. Just really being aware of where I am. And who I am, and why I'm doing the things I'm doing.
You know, that brings up another thought about a conference like this, right? So you're meeting other people, and you're talking to other people. And, you know, you kind of mentioned it already. You realize how much you guys know.
Mm-hmm.
You take it for granted, because you just know it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's no big deal. You guys just know it, especially because you guys can probably talk languages just amongst yourself.
Right, we have
you
a
have
shorthand.
Your own, yeah, right, you have your own. And so that probably helps the relationship, too, when you get a little, he's smart, yeah, you know what, you're right, he is. And you start to help, it helps a little bit. So I think that's another benefit you're going to get. Now, you guys also, you have another company, that you're, or another group you're involved in, yoursourcedinventory.com.
Right.
Right. And I'm in your group, so I can endorse it, because I'm blown away with the quality of it. And I'm in a whole bunch of them. And so, not that I'm putting anybody in any other way, but I'm just impressed at the consistency and the attention to details you guys take.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different partnership, that you're involved in.
And that's a partnership that Mike is not involved
in. So it's a side marriage that she's involved in. How do you approach that? Because you're dealing with several other types of personalities that probably aren't as entrepreneurial as Mike, or they don't have the same skill sets. How do you deal with that?
Well, I agreed to be a partner, and they approached me. It was REA Scheinbein and Darla Flack. Darla and I are good friends. We're in a group together, and we've been good friends
for years. Very
and,
impressive.
So she was the one who originally came to me and told me who was involved, and I was impressed with the people that were already involved. So number one, I partnered myself with people that I know they're hard workers. They're going to do the work. They're smart people, and they're ethical. They have a very high ethical standard. They're not trying to take someone's money. We worked on this project for months and months and months before we ever even thought about launching it.
So there's another lesson. So you put the process in place well before. So the cart went before the horse, clearly, in this case, right? You clearly made sure the cart was right. Everything was done
Everything had to be as perfect as we could get it, and I think all three of us were perfectionists. So we wanted to get it just right.
And how long has it been going?
Since, I think we launched in April, late April, and we started in January.
No kidding.
So I remember it was right around New Year's when I was working on a charity idea that we had that turns out was not the best idea, so it got scrapped. But I was working on an idea when I started getting texts from Darla saying, hey, I want you to be in this. And then we started looking for our VAs. We lost a lot of VAs along the way because the quality wasn't there. The leads were bad. Some of our VAs we found were working for other people.
Yeah, that's very common.
And we had to get rid of them. So now we have a nice core team of VAs that really blow us away almost daily with the leads they find. And there's plans to bring on more VAs, and we're going to have our current team train them.
Okay.
So that way we can build outward. But we have not expanded our list because we want to make sure this one list is right.
Okay.
We don't want to get negative feedback from people. We don't want to take anybody's money if they're not going to get value.
Did you have a training process for your VAs? Is it documented?
It is not documented.
Okay. Well, I'm
that
just interested to see.
It would have been a smart idea.
Well, a good piece of advice I got from somebody else was they use a private Facebook group for them, and they put all their training material in that private Facebook group. That way they can add people in
and
or
take people out.
That way they only have to have it in one place. If they decide to make a change, they make it in one place, and everybody's current on it, rather than sharing Google Docs and all the rest of that jazz.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, that's a clever idea. And I didn't know if you guys got to that point.
Yeah, we do have a little Facebook group, our little admin group that we have our VAs in, and we also have an administrative assistant who's a seller who helps us each day. Because it's a lot of work. It's a lot of administrative work to keep track, and it's just one list. And we've learned how to work with each other, me and Darla and RIA. Darla, I'm very analytical. I'm a very unemotional person. And I think REA is very similar to me.
Yeah, he's pretty similar.
Darla, she feels things very deeply.
Hmm.
And so she has to learn how to deal with us as very analytical people. And then we have to learn how to work with her because she feels things very personally. And I don't want to offend my friend. I would never want to do that. And so when we have disagreements, we have to make sure that we're very careful in our choice of words so that we don't end up fighting. And fortunately, we don't fight. We all get along pretty well.
This is another example where you're mindful of the other person. You're putting yourself in that perspective, kind of like what Mike talked about, is to make sure that you're thinking, oh, maybe I might be a little bit wrong. I better be careful how I handle this because... Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not perfect either, and I think that's a great example.
And it helps that those two are just they're the epitome of professionalism.
Yeah, very both of them are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I told you, I quote Darla all the time where she talks about Amazon for her is this segment of her life,
mm-hmm.
and that segment is adjustable depending on all the other segments.
Right.
If they have more needs, it's all coming out of her Amazon business because those other needs are not, they're not negotiable.
Right.
Her husband's time, her time with her son, mm-hmm. her family, that is not negotiable.
She's
I love it. I just think it's so smart.
Amazing things in her community where they're renovating rooms for women who are less fortunate. I think it might be for battered women. I'm not 100% sure, but I know that they're renovating these spaces, and basically these women can come in and live there. It's like a safe haven for them. And so that's something this year that's been very important to her. And that was another, I'm just like, you're an amazing human being.
And she would take that from, again, from
her
Amazon.
Time.
That's it. And that's just a smart way to put perspective. That was kind of when we started the beginning of the conversation. Has this become a business for you?
Mm-hmm.
And it sounded like it was. And I think that's a risk that this becomes too much of a business because or a job.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to use the phrase business. I meant job. And you don't need a job. You had jobs.
No,
you left jobs, right?
I didn't want a job.
And, well, Mike's never had a job.
He had one, but it was barely a job.
And he wasn't very good at it, probably.
I take issue with the idea, and it's just, you know, it's all semantics.
Right.
And I get called out for semantics all the time.
One of our biggest arguments usually ends with me screaming, semantics!
When people talk about having a real job, and it's like, people, this is a real job.
It's a business.
It is a business, you're right. But it is the rebirth of the mom and pop shop.
Yeah.
We haven't seen people, individuals, be able to make money like this on their own terms, save for the fact that it's actually Amazon's terms, but you get to work your own hours. You get to source the way you want to. You get to hire people if you want to. You get to not hire people if you want to. You get to spend your money the way you want to. Divide your time. It's just, people haven't been able to do this for themselves,
in decades.
The 60s it started, probably, with the chains, and then in the 70s, the big box stores came in. I mean, not to mention that Sears and JCPenney and Macy's...
And the malls were in there somewhere.
And everything. I mean, they've been around for decades already.
And then Walmart came in.
And then Walmart comes in, and the fast food restaurants are everywhere, putting the... This is the first time in decades. I mean, the internet has given back the mom and pop shop to anybody who wants to own one.
It's even less restrictive than the mom and pop shop.
Exactly.
The mom and pop shop had to open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They had to. They had no, you know, they had to work the hours that they worked. Here you really don't. If you find an amazing deal, you could be done in an hour, right? Technically.
That's true.
You could buy, depending on what you want, one buy can last you the whole month if that's what you want, if you're that lucky and that good or whatever. No, I agree with you. I think the risk of it becoming the proverbial job where, you know, you're told when to come in and when you must leave. Oh, by the way, you have to take a 15-minute break. Oh, and if you work more than 40 hours or 8 hours, depending on the state, some of them are 8 hours in a day. That's an overtime issue. Oh, and.
You can box yourself into this business. And I think there's a danger that people don't realize, and we were starting to fall prey to that. The word hustle gets thrown around a lot.
Right.
You gotta hustle, you gotta hustle. So that can be misconstrued into, you gotta work 24 hours a day. If you're not working, then you're not succeeding. We don't want to work more than we are because we have a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. We don't want to work in the evenings. We don't want to work on the weekends.
Well, then how do you turn it off? And that's probably the best way to close this, is to talk about how you're able to turn it off. You guys had a great year last year. You're having as great of a year this year. Now, you're intentionally controlling that.
We are very intentionally controlling. One of the things we said on stage at CES that you said was that we traded money for time this year. Our income's fine. We're blessed. We're doing better than a lot of people could hope to do. We live in a very small rural community, and there's not a lot of options. So we didn't need more money because our bills are paid, and if we want to go on a vacation, we go on a vacation. And so this summer, we very intentionally took time off. We didn't take any big vacations. We didn't do, you know, the 4 or 5 week trips. But we each week we worked a little bit. We probably worked a little each day.
25 hours between us a week.
Between us over the summer.
Just so we could have time that we could go out in the woods and run around.
Well, the three-year-old's only going to be three
this
year. And guess what? Next year they're not going to be three. And so you will miss that. So you're able to turn it off this year. Looking to next year, right? Do you think that now that if you were to put down on paper in your business plan, right, if you put a plan for next year, a budget, we'll call it, would you budget that downtime in there intentionally now because you got a taste of it this year? You saw probably what it did for your business, your relationship?
Obviously, we know that we can if we want to.
We've got some trips planned.
And we do have some trips planned. But we don't know exactly where our business is going to take us next year. Again, we are working on some other projects. We're going to see what happens there. Things are going to, I think, could possibly start launching. So we might have a very busy year.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We might take the summer off completely. I am not a huge planner, as we've already established. I'm not a huge planner. I don't write things down. I'm very, you know, I do things in a haphazard way. She reins me in, but I think she knows better than to try to plan my life too much, because I'm, you know, I'll blow back pretty hard.
Plus, it stifles your creativity. Mm-hmm. You know, you're creative, Brittany, but Mike, you're creative in that entrepreneurial way, and you don't want to stifle that because that's obviously part of your success.
Mm-hmm. And I've learned that broad plans are sometimes better than very specific.
Yeah. Okay.
And so my plan for next year would be for our Amazon business to scale the number of SKUs down so that we can sell higher volumes of less items.
Right.
Through wholesale, or you know, he's got a lot of relationships out there in the retail world. So that, I think, is where our Amazon business will go. We're fortunate. We've got an employee at our house right now listing everything that's in the warehouse. We have a warehouse built into our house. So he's there packing, shipping, listing. And he was there all day yesterday, and we're here.
Right.
So continuing to utilize that,
but
which
that's
frees
intentional
us up.
Again.
So
that's
it's
intentional.
Very intentional. We're going to launch a game that's going to come out potentially as early as December, January. We're still fine-tuning all that with our printer. And then we're also doing, in November, we're doing a presentation with a lot of local businesses, brand owners, for our Chamber of Commerce, where we're going to teach brand owners how to put their products on Amazon. So that could lead to some consulting work or presentations down the road. So that's what I kind of see for us.
But you're taking skills that you've evolved, you've learned, you've honed, and you're moving them, and it kind of relating back to your creative side. The game sounds like something that would be very thrilling for both of you.
It's fun.
Yeah,
it's
I can
been a
see
lot
it
fun.
Being. And so I just think that that's just such a great lesson, is to make sure that, you know, I'll use my socks and packaging socks. While it works and you can make a lot of money at it, you will lose eventually the thrill of it. It does end. Eventually, it's like, oh, more socks. And so you guys have really figured out a way. And I just think it's so terrific as a couple, because it says something about you two as a couple, as a marriage, you know, as one, that you're able to do that. I just think it's inspiring, and I'm blown away with it. And I just I think people need to hear it and know that it's okay. You will disagree from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
It's go back and put it in perspective.
Right.
And just remember that not all is broken. This is a little piece. We got to tweak this piece, but the rest of it is really good. And so I think that's a great lesson. So how do people find out more about you guys or get in touch with you? Is it Your Sourced Inventory the best way, or what would you say?
If you're interested in our clothing and shoe list, yoursourcedinventory.com. There's also a free Facebook group, Your Sourced Inventory, where we...
And I'll have links to that all on the podcast.
Yeah, and there we like to just share. We share a few deals. They're not going to be the deals that our subscribers get. These are kind of the deals where we're like, well, we might have an education.
You get a taste.
Yeah, here's something. Maybe this is a bad deal, and we're going to tell you why. And we try to educate. We're also going to share any coupon that comes through our email, like, hey, big sale.
Okay.
You can also find both of us on Facebook under our profiles.
And people can reach out and just mm-hmm. say, hey. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I really appreciate you guys taking the time. I know we talked. I know it's uncomfortable for Mike, for sure.
What?
You did great. It's so cool, again, you know, you guys take it for granted that, you know, this is just normal for you. I'm telling you, a lot of couples will benefit because they need to know that it's okay to mm-hmm. disagree sometimes, and yet you still love her and she still loves you, and I just think that's so cool. So thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it, and I just wish you guys nothing but the best success.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.